forming the front lines of the war against injustice and stupidity, armed with little more than a compass and a rubber knife. This is No Agenda, coming to you from the United Kingdom on the left coast of Gitmo Nation East. I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak here in northern Silicon Valley. Non-existent location, but it's also known as Gitmo Nation West or Northwest.
Yo. Hey, John. Good afternoon to you. Good morning.
It's actually still morning here, yes.
Right. We're a little later than usual today. I was traveling back from the Netherlands with the Lady Patricia.
How did that go?
It was good. It was the final Pop Stars Live. You know, they found the, after 10 weeks of searching and unbelievable peril and turmoil, they were able to succeed, John, and find three finalists who would form the number one pop group of the lowlands.
Okay, tell us who they were.
It's even better than this. You'll love this. So they, the idea of pop stars, they find three finalists out of thousands or whatever, and then they form a group. And then, on the final night, they reveal who the group is, the name of the group, and their single.
Oh, really? They already did a single?
Yeah. And so, they already had recorded, 11 different versions of it, you know, because of the combinations.
With different groups.
The combination of group members, and they had different album covers and everything. But it was pretty funny because, so they did this big reveal, right, of the name, big digital boards flashing everywhere, and then boom, and there's the name, and the crowd literally went, and the name is, and everyone went, it was Red, spelled R-E, the blue E, the E was blue and facing backwards, with an exclamation point, R-E-D, Red. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what the crowd did.
Is this known? I mean, can you reveal this, or are you a non-disclosed?
No, it was live last night, so...
it was live?
Yeah, no, I always tell the truth.
Well, that doesn't sound very exciting.
No, but you know what? It doesn't matter, because it just doesn't matter. I can tell.
We're walking through... The problem with doing something like that, where you have a typographical cuteness mm-hmm. with a backward E, is that people cannot, you can't type it in an email.
Thank you. Very good point. But the whole thing, even the song, you know, it was like, the song was very High School Musical, you know, it was like, so to me it was a real anticlimax, but it doesn't really matter because it's the excitement and people like it and it's a live show and millions of people are watching and they all vote and it's just like a community type thing, you know.
Well, as you know, I hate this kind of thing.
Yeah, I know you do. But it's good because we did have real losers. I like the loser part.
I always used to enjoy watching sports events so they could go into, and they stopped doing this, by the way, about 5 or 6 years ago. Usually in a big football game, the big game, the final game of the season and the championship game, baseball too.
Yeah.
And then they used to go into the loser's locker room.
Yeah.
To watch.
Watch them cry.
You know, these guys are just miserable, and some of them. And then about 5 or 6 years ago, they stopped doing that. Now what they do, and I find it really lame, they find the coach, the losing coach, who's usually standing outside the locker room, looking, forlorn, and then they ask him a couple of stupid questions, and that's the end of it.
That's it, right.
We don't get to see the fun part, which was the loser's locker room. It was hilarious. So as an American, it made you feel good to go into the loser's locker room, especially if you were rooting for the other team, the winning team.
It's important. It's important.
There's more to it than just winning. It's watching the other team lose. That's really part of the game.
Yeah. No, but we're not allowed to have losers anymore. I keep telling people a great new reality show, which, by the way, John, I'm sure you would watch, would be America Loves Losers. You'd watch that.
Yeah, I would, but you know what? They would never make the show right. That's a show that you know would be so, the suits, as they like to be called, would screw it up. So it would be a bad show. So I probably wouldn't watch it.
I don't know.
If you produced it and I was involved, yes. And you had some good writers,
well,
we'd have something. But then
it would have to be called America Loves Losers and Hookers. Because, that's your mantra.
Well, you have to, I've said this before, and it always is, it's a fact. Letterman does it. You can throw in the word hookers because it's a really, it's for some reason, it's just a funny word. And it always gets a chuckle.
Mm.
It's a cheap joke is what it is.
Hey, John, hold on 1 second. I think the kids turned on the download again. I swear to God, I bet you they did that.
All right, go check it out.
Do you think they would defy me like that?
I would.
Hold on, don't move. All right, you there?
Yeah.
Okay, well, indeed. It's funny. This shows you how kids don't understand stuff when it comes to the internet. So just before we started the show, I could tell on the Skype connection that someone was really... We're still in the old house, of course, with limited bandwidth, like a megabit down. And I go to the kids and I say, hey, you know, are you guys downloading something? You know, yeah, we're downloading a film. Okay, that's fine, but you have to stop for the next hour and a half because we're doing the show. And of course, even then I got grief. Oh, so no, stop. And then, I could tell that something was going on because you started to warble. And so I go downstairs. I asked you guys not to download. No, but it's just a YouTube clip. Okay. They don't seem to understand.
Just a YouTube.
It's just YouTube. That's not downloading. No, it's not.
You should go and turn off the machine.
Yeah. They're still doing it anyway. It's okay. It'll last.
So, well, let's talk about that topic. I did a column for PC Magazine. People can look it up. It's called Liars, Cheaters, and Thieves. And it's about that study that showed that, you know, kids are,
Liars, Cheaters, and Thieves. Exactly. Yeah. Great article. How many words was it? 20?
So I got this note from this guy, Mike Johnson, and I'm going to read it. Because it's a very interesting thing. I don't know quite what to do with this information, it's got a column written all over it, but I'm not sure really. But you'll see when you read it. John, I just wanted to share this with you in regard to your PC Magazine article, Liars, Cheaters, and Thieves, and I hope you find it of interest. In 1987, I worked for Technical Studies and Analysis, which was a private contractor working at the Cheyenne Mountain Project in Colorado Springs. While working there, one colonel, whom I thought was an intelligent man, told me several times during discussions about education of incidents that took place in the White House during Lyndon Johnson's administration. The colonel's name was Bill Yeltsin, and he had been the liaison for the Joint Chiefs of Staff to the Oval Office during Lyndon Johnson's administration. So he spent a lot of time at the White House and the Oval Office. Bill told me that the Joint Chiefs of Staff were called to the Oval Office three times during Lyndon Johnson's administration to be told that Johnson was going to declare martial law.
Mm-hmm.
Suspending the Constitution because of the riots and demonstrations on college campuses in the United States. Bill also told me that it was the Joint Chiefs of Staff that talked Johnson out of it all three times. The result of the ensuing discussion was the conclusion that an educated population cannot be controlled, and the United States should get out of the business of educating the population. This brilliant decision was made in 1967, and the SAT scores for college entrance exams peaked in 1969 and have been in decline ever since.
Yeah, they just changed the scale. They changed the scale, John.
But to make it look good.
Yeah.
Of course, the Nixon administration had no problem embracing this philosophy, and the results are history and indirectly the George Bush administration. Anyway,
What's really nice? It's so nice to hear that someone from my audience is also paying attention to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because that is so on the money. It is so absolutely right. You know, this administration has threatened martial law to Congress, to
right.
When they were on the bailout bill.
Right.
Like, if you guys don't put this through, there's going to be martial law. They'll be fighting in the streets. And of course they were right because it's happening now worldwide. Have you been following Greece, my friend?
Yeah, Greece is a mess.
Yeah, Greece.
It's all over. You know, the funny thing is, it's interesting to me. This, by the way, what took place in the late 60s during the various cities that had riots. The Detroit riots were the most notable. But they happened in Oakland and other places around the country.
Which, and for the people who don't know about the Detroit riots, this was about housing.
Well, you know, the way these things happen, and I think the Greece situation is exactly the same, is there's a pent-up hostility.
Yeah, something happens and
then there's a
snap.
Triggering mechanism.
Yeah, exactly.
And the triggering mechanisms, you know, the people keep focusing on it when it's not really what caused it. And the triggering mechanism in Greece was, I guess, some...
15-year-old boy got shot by police and killed.
Right.
Yeah, that was the trigger. But the people are, you know, they've got pitchforks and torches out in front of government.
Yeah.
And yeah. Belgium, have you did you follow what happened in Belgium?
No. Oh, no, I'm not on that one.
Oh, this is fantastic. So they've had a huge issue with their government, with their parliament in general for the past nine. They actually had no government for several months, and this is an inherent problem in the region between the Flemish speaking population of Belgium and the French speaking population, and they hate each other. And I'm not kidding. They absolutely, for whatever reason, they just hate each other, the Walloniers and the Flemish. And so we had this huge nationalization of the Fortis Bank, which is half Belgian, half Dutch, and was subsequently nationalized partially by the Dutch government, partially by the Belgian government. And they tried to pull a fast one. What they wanted to do is sell Fortis, which now was owned by the people, by the governments. They wanted to sell it to the BNP Bank. But they did it without consulting the shareholders, who, of course, were in the tank. You know, it was like, you know, I don't know, 30 euros a share or whatever half a year ago, and now it's a euro a share. They didn't consult the shareholders, and of course, there was a revolt among shareholders. But what happened is, it turns out the prime minister and the minister of justice obstructed justice by trying to, you know, it's not quite clear what they did, but they obstructed justice to make this merger go through. And then, you know, there was essentially an intervention and it got stopped. And, which of course will, you know, now makes the sale impossible. It screws up two banks. But the population is outraged and they're starting fires in the streets. They're like, you know, you guys don't love us, which, yeah, big surprise. Your government doesn't love you, Belgium. when will people wake up? Hey, they had one of those photo booths at the airport, at Schiphol Airport. The ones that takes the picture of you naked.
Tell me about this.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you've seen the pictures, haven't you?
Of these? No, I don't know anything about it. I'm completely out of the loop.
Oh, come on, man. And so you have these newfangled security devices, and there's two now. When you go to the EasyJet gate. The old-fashioned, put it through the X-ray.
No, what airport is this again?
Schiphol Airport in Amsterdam.
Okay.
A very modern, you know, of course.
Oh, right, I've been there. It's a gorgeous airport. Yeah. It's one of the prettiest airports I've ever been to.
Yeah, owned by the government. And so you have the old-fashioned, put your shit through the X-ray and then walk through the metal detector. Take off your shoes, of course, and all everything you have. Strip down. And now on the left-hand side, you still have the X-ray for your bag, but then you go into a booth. It's a clear booth. You turn 90 degrees facing towards a wall. You put your hands up above your head it's the weirdest pose, because, you know, it looks like you're surrendering. Which, of course, is exactly what you're doing.
It's just very symbolic. Yes.
And then, and they have the little monitor showing you what's happening, right? So you see, there's a picture taken, and then you see all these wires, and there's a back office, and that's where people are looking to see what you're wearing. They don't actually show the picture, but if you Google it on the internet, you'll see that it pretty much, it looks like you're naked. That's pretty much what they're seeing there.
And it sounds like a pretty interesting job to have.
Well, particularly, you know, so my wife is a celebrity. And she said, I'm not going to walk through that. And I said, well, no, not today, because you have a choice, but tomorrow. And it was funny, because I learned something else about my wife. She's starting to wake up a little bit. Because here's a trick I do, and here's something I advise to you that will make you feel much better and probably not get you in jail. When you're at the airport, now, typically, this is what I find. It's in the States, it happens a lot, but it was happening at Amsterdam, Schiphol Airport. The security personnel, so that would be TSA in the States, they bark at you, and they bark commands, and they, you know, and it's offensive the way it comes across. I've learned that if you speak to them and it's not easy to do, because you got to practice, but if you speak back at them in exactly the same tone and volume as they're speaking to you, it really sets them back. I have my little computer bag. There was no computer in it. It's actually only a netbook would fit into it, but I kind of like it. So I just put my passport and stuff in there, and I put it on the X-ray belt. And this woman who has just been barking was like, take your laptop out, sir. And I went, there's no laptop in there. And she went, and you could see her like step back three steps. And she's like, what are you talking? And my wife actually steps in. She says, you are just rude. You're just barking at people. Why do you do that? Why do you have to bark at people? Just talk to them in a civil tone of voice. But I've started doing this, and it's a lot of fun. You know, the people that have the little plastic baggies, they have these at Heathrow. They have yellow shirts on, and they have plastic bags, and this is where you're supposed to put your liquids in there. And they're literally like, do you have any liquids? Do you need a plastic bag? And I can't help myself. Like, no, I don't. I do not need a plastic bag. I need no liquids. And you can see that, and they're freaked out. And some of them actually realize, crap, you know, I'm talking like a fucking idiot. So anyway, that's a tip of the day. And I was very happy to see my wife just step up there for a moment and say, hey, you know, dude, chill the fuck out. People are crazy. Give someone a badge and they turn into a Nazi.
Ugh. Yeah, it's the old rule. And while you're on the top, well, that top, there's a couple good books that people should read. One of them is Sinclair Lewis's It Can't Happen Here, which actually describes this situation, the badge turning people into Nazis.
Let me write this down. Hold
and
on a second.
And the other one, which is a little harder to...
Let me just write it down. It'll be important for Bubba as well. Is Sinclair who?
Sinclair Lewis, the famous Nobel Prize winning novelist from who did most of his good work in the 20s.
Well, you know, since Al Gore won it, the Nobel Peace Prize means shit.
No, that's different. I'm talking about Nobel Prize for Literature, not the Nobel Peace Prize. The Nobel Prizes are done in Sweden. The Nobel Peace Prize is done in Norway, and it's a different group of...
Oh.
It's totally different.
Oh, okay. Didn't realize.
People don't understand that. But
okay, Sinclair Lewis, It Can't Happen Here. Sounds great. Sounds like a throwback to Nazi Germany.
Great book. And then there's a book, I can't remember the name of the author, it's Chinese. It's a very interesting book to read. In fact, it was banned, I think, in China. And it was a bestseller in Hong Kong and most of Asia, called Life and Death in Shanghai.
Okay, Life and Death in
Shanghai. Life and Death in Shanghai is one of the most chilling accounts of people and how they, you know, this was during the turnover of Shanghai as it went communist, and the era of Shanghai around World War II and before and after, I think, a little bit. It's just a hair-raising, excellent book to read.
And it's so funny you say that, because, you know, I often equate the situation, the scenario that we're in to, you know, very much what happened in World War II. You know, we had a lot of, you know, the economic conditions turned out to be the same, and we had a lot of luxury and society gossip, and then this guy rose up, and then, of course, you know, there was the true fascism integration of corporations and government. And so when I equate what's happening with Obama to Hitler, and, you know, Patricia will say, hey, man, you shouldn't say that because he was a really bad dude. So yeah, but the whole point is no one said anything then. And that was the whole problem. If someone had stepped up, then maybe it would have stopped. Right.
Well, I'm not going to go as far as to equate Obama with Hitler until I see the signs, big giant. And I was with somebody the other day who I believe is says he's not, but I think he's an economic hitman. And so I'm walking down the street, and I noticed that if you go to the Fifth and Mission garage in San Francisco, and you look down Fifth, way down there, there's a building with a poster, you know, they're because of these new inkjet printers, they're printing these billboards the size of, you know, the unbelievable size of a building. And so I saw, and it was a Gap ad or something. It's huge. But I pointed and said, you know, two years from now, it's going to be a big picture of Obama's head with our glorious leader.
Yeah. War is peace.
War is peace. Right.
Well, you know where that's from, don't you?
Yeah, 1984, I think.
Yeah. Okay. Just checking.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but anyway, at least he's bringing change, voting alongside President Bush for, or not voting. Or how does this work? President Bush, so wait, the Senate said no bailout for the car companies, and then the president said, oh, here's the money. How does that work? Is government no longer necessary?
I don't know. I don't know how any of this works anymore.
He said they still had like $15 billion left from the first tranche of the TARP, Troubled Asset Relief Program. And so now they're taking 14.6 of that 15 billion. I guess 400 million is necessary for some country estate somewhere. Some more banker bonuses. So 14.6 billion and appropriating that towards the bailout. I don't understand. I mean, since when is a car company How can that qualify as a bank?
Well, it's General Motors does because they do their own, or they used to do their own financing, GMAC.
Right, but that would mean it would go to GMAC and not the actual production part of the company, because it's two separate companies.
I know. As far as I can tell, this is the best example of creative bookkeeping that we've ever seen in the history of the United States. And then, of course, we had the other thing that we didn't talk about last week. If we did, we didn't talk much about it.
Bernie Madden. Yeah, Madden is not Madden. Not Maddow. Maddow.
Maddow.
Maddow.
Maddow.
Whatever. Yeah, the Ponzi scheme guy. What do you mean? We talked about it at great length.
Did we?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, sure, we did. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of the show. Really, really enjoy your presence.
So
has been going on since 1970 with this guy.
Yeah, I know. That's really amazing. You have to give the guy,
But don't people now understand that this is exactly how Wall Street works? I mean, it's and clearly the game is up for everybody, and it's just all collapsing on top of itself. And this behavior, this lying, like Goldman Sachs saying oil going to 200, and then now we got to reverse it around, and it's down to
38 bucks at barrel.
Yeah, but they tell you red, and then and then they bet on black. That's the way it is. And the Ponzi scheme part, isn't that exactly what derivatives is all about?
Yeah, it seems so. Hey, by the way, before we go too far in the show, I want to do a shout out to two of our listeners who gave us access to their Sling boxes.
Ah, yes.
One is Justin Sloan in Hawaii. And by the way, if you haven't checked in on the Hawaii news, they got they got a sportscaster on one of the stations that the guy is the size of five people. You know, there's these Polynesians, certain, especially Samoans, they're just big.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not talking about, just not fat big, big.
They're usually the guys you see on Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Yeah, right, exactly. Huge. This guy's so big, it's like, oh my God. Anyway, the other our other pal is Andrew Thompson out of Detroit,
yeah,
which gives us a little access to the couple Canadian channels, which now we need to get some international people to cough up a serial number for us.
It's really cool, though, because people just send the serial number, say, hey, go ahead, play around with it, and I love it. It's like we've discovered sliced bread here. I mean, these sling boxes have been around for a while, but to have this type of little community is cool, especially when we're the sole benefactors of it.
Well, it also works for us because, for one thing, these guys, I guess like you, by the way, your channels, you got to fix that. Or I guess when you move, never mind.
When I move, I'm going to fix it. Yeah, because you can't
switch.
It's
always stuck on the TV guide, and I can't change the channel.
Always stuck on whatever my wife wants.
He doesn't have the program guide hooked up, but he does have the channel selector, so you can go look it up on on Yahoo
right,
TV
right,
or something
right,
and find
right.
see what's on what channel, and you can just change the channel. But I think it's very cool, and what's cool about the fact that you and I are on different time schedules, so we probably don't bump into each other if we're actually scanning one of these boxes.
No, it doesn't conflict exactly. No, it's cool, and I thoroughly enjoy it because I just love particularly public access channels. So there were some. Well, any C-SPAN type program, I really like.
The local ones, you can't, somebody sent us a note saying, you could get a lot of these things on the internet, just go directly and they have streaming. And it's not
quite
the same as going
no.
to some, it's like being in Detroit.
Yeah.
And then, it's like if you were in a hotel room, I guess, and having full access to the whole cable system and seeing the wacky stuff and watching the local news is actually quite entertaining.
The local news is fantastic.
That's why I think a really good, if we had a big setup, a bunch of these things all over the country and England and wherever, so we could get there's nothing better. For example, there's a disaster in, Raleigh, North Carolina. It would be cool to watch the local news coverage of it rather than, what we get, which is just watered down and,
bullshit.
Some freelance correspondent.
By the way, speaking of that, did you hear that 4C cables were cut once again?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't.
I was reading. Hold on a second. Let me just find it. This was, it just happened today. Hold on. I'm just getting situated. I don't know where I read that. I'm sure someone posted it onto my drop site, so I'll bring that up. Yeah, it's apparently all traffic to India was like 80% was cut off. I'll get the details. It's coming up. It's a little bit slow. Here it comes. Hold on. It's a little bit slow.
Usually, I wonder what the backstory is on this one. They came up with the other one. It was just an accident.
Oh, right. Here we go. Undersea cables cut. 14 countries lose access. Oh, this is from Wired. Okay. Hold on. Reports from the Mediterranean indicate that two of the undersea cables severed and repaired earlier this year have been cut again, disrupting internet access and phone service between the Middle East, Europe, and parts of Asia. An additional third cable is down in the same region. The so-called CMEWE4 cable, whatever.
Interesting. Middle East involved yet again.
Yes. France Telecom report listed 14 countries affected. Wait, that's a link. 14 countries affected by the current problem. The Maldives are 100% down. Well, there you go. Here we go. Saudi Arabia, 50% out of service. Djibouti, 71%. Egypt, 52%. United Arab Emirates, 68% out of service. And I'm not quite sure how they're measuring that. India, so they're doing packet pings or whatever.
82, I have no idea.
Yeah, 82% of packets dropped, I'll just presume. Lebanon, Malaysia, Maldives, Pakistan, Qatar, Syria, Taiwan, Yemen, and Zambia. At the same time, Russian warships pull into harbor in Cuba. You did know that, didn't you? What do they have any news there? I mean, do you know what day it is in America?
there's a couple things. One, we do have a lot of news. Nicole Kidman got her tit in the ringer for playing a didgeridoo, which apparently is not supposed to be played by women because it makes them infertile, according to legend. And then something, Britney Spears, I guess, was in the news for something or other. That's pretty much covers what we're dealing with here.
Excellent. Yeah, so, it's almost like a replay, man. So, that's what people in Europe are saying. It's like, wow, isn't that just kind of like Kennedy, where, early in his administration, you got the Cuban Missile Crisis, and now an actual Russian warship is now at port in Cuba.
And I think they're only there for one reason.
The cigars?
Hookers.
I should have known. it's a crazy-ass world. Crazy-ass world.
Yeah, I think obviously they're doing some saber rattling to keep to try to keep that missile shield out of Poland or whatever.
Yeah. And well, that ain't gonna happen. That's going up.
I don't know. I think Obama's gonna find an excuse not to put it there.
Oh please. No
it's
way.
It's just an expensive waste of money.
Yeah. Well, I somehow doubt that he's going to stop that. I really can't see. And if so, then it's just a small piece of the aggression towards that entire region with the troop movements we're putting in there. So, well, maybe.
Well, we'll see. I'm giving the guy a benefit of the doubt.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm giving him a pass, a benefit of the doubt. Everybody's all over this character, but from both sides of the aisle. I mean, the entire, all the left wingers out here, including the crazy mayor we've got over here in San Francisco, came out and moaned and groaned about Obama, who Obama picked for the convocation.
What's the convocation?
The convocation is, when he's going to get, it's a guy who gives a prayer.
It's a controversial guy or whatever.
He's just one of these, mega church guys or evangelist or whatever he is. And, he said he doesn't think much. He was, I guess, one of the guys that was that was for Proposition 8 in California, the gay marriage amendment.
Oh, okay, right.
And so because of that, he's no good. And so they're fussing at Obama for that. And I guess they're fussing at him for a bunch of other stuff he's doing. And then, of course, all the right-wing talk show guys are, convinced that Obama is Hitler.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, we're all going to be, wearing brown shirts. And, of course, there is that issue with Obama wanting to have that civilian army.
Of a million people.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. But I think that's going to be – I think he's going to be too busy.
I think it's every American has to do 50 hours of community service per year?
That too, that's different, though. There's another one. He's going to do like a military, you know, brown shirts, essentially.
Well, but it's already starting. We now have, for the Christmas season, we're going to have DUI checkpoints armed by military. For training purposes only, of course.
Where's this?
In California, dude.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that's weird. Up in Washington, because now they've declared the border areas of the United States to be... to include one, it's like a 100 mile from the borders is called the border area.
It's a start.
In other words, everything in the country except for like Wyoming and North Dakota and South Dakota is a border area. Actually, North Dakota is. I'm sorry. I'm South Dakota. So, so up in Port Angeles where I'm headed, so I'm going to have a white Christmas. It's snowing up there. It's going to be good for a laugh. There are, apparently, they're called Border Patrol. They got some new border agency or some bull that's actually turns out to be Homeland Security.
Yeah,
and they gave them a different title.
Yeah, and they're doing illegal search and seizure.
They're stopping people left and right for no apparent reason and making them look open their trunk. Yeah. And they're like acting like cops, but they have no police power or they do. Yeah. I don't know what the deal is. They're crazy.
Yeah. But this is all coming from the Northern Command as well, which was set up by, I think Clinton set up the Northern Command, didn't he? Which is,
in case of
basically the precursor to martial law. But yeah, there's three or four, maybe even five battalions now. And, in California, they're going to be doing DUI checkpoints and, they'll be former.
Where did you get this story?
From the news. You didn't
know
this?
What newspaper are you reading? The Independent or the Telegraph? I mean, where's it? I didn't see
that. Actually, this came from the Army Times, I think. It's from their own fucking publication.
It seems to me that this is not being played up very much. And I'm living in the Berkeley area, for God's sake. There should be riots in the street. These people are rioting over the gay marriage.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. That's my point, as always. They're rioting about fraud on Strictly Come Dancing.
Exactly.
We're
doomed.
I can find it for you if you want.
Hold on. Taking your side now.
Yeah. Oh.
If I see one military guy stopping anybody for any reason in this during this holiday season, then I'm gonna not argue with you anymore.
Will you then do a daily show with me, and we'll just go full force against the New World Order, John?
Until we're killed.
That's what I tell my wife. I said, look, here's who you call. Here's all the information. And please don't let anyone tell you that it was suicide by cop. That's bullshit. That's not
suicide. He was depressed.
That's what they did with the guy in Guilford. They're literally calling it was suicide by cop, you know, because he was so depressed. He took a fake gun and waved it at the police so he could get killed. And it wouldn't shoot. It wouldn't even make a noise. Suicide by cop. Yeah, well, this is going to happen. I'm looking up, I'm trying to find a good article for you.
Well, the Army Times has got actually, you know, the Army Times is, I should look at it more often for the blog because it's got good material in it.
Well, this is where I learned about it first. Are you looking at it, Army Times?
No, I'm not.
Hold on. I want to find it for you. Yeah, man, this is completely, so for those of you who don't live in America, and for many of you who do, there is something called the Posse Comitatus Act. Which specifically forbids under, except under special circumstances.
I think it's part of the Constitution.
It's part of the Constitution. I'm sorry, you're right. It's part of the Constitution.
Yeah.
It forbids the army being used against American citizens unless, special circumstances voted by, Congress. And of course, with all the executive orders Bush put into place, it can basically now just happen. It can just take place.
This is interesting. The top story in Army Times is special ops surge sparks debate. Defense Secretary Robert Gates, who's going to be working for Obama, is obviously working for him now because he plans to deploy three additional combat brigades to Afghanistan. That's not going to work, by the way.
What's not going to work?
Anything.
Well, but they're only in Afghanistan as a base. I mean,
they got to get out of there.
They're not. They're going to stay there forever. They love it. Did you see the picture of Bush hugging Karzai?
No.
Dude.
Were they kissing?
Almost. Almost. Mm. But he had his hand on his, like, his neck and the back of his neck, you know, like, really, really like pushing his face against his. It was kind of creepy. Of course, it's just a snapshot. So you know, it's taken out.
Well, you know, I have a photo. I got to put this on the blog. I'm gonna have to dig it up because I unfortunately take so many pictures that these. I have a lot of material that just starts disappearing into the ether. You know, I think I'm up to some outrageous number. Like I said, 300-400 gigabytes of photos. It's horrible. Anyway, I have this picture during the convention. There was when Obama was giving us during the convention when he got his numbers or whatever, and Biden came out on the stage with his wife, and Obama gave Biden's wife a big kiss. And on the lips, I believe.
How hot.
And I'm surprised somebody didn't make a fuss about that, but they didn't. What they should have made a fuss about was later, I think Biden gave a speech or something, and his daughters came out, and he grabbed one of his daughters by, I have the picture, because I took it off the thing, off the screen. He grabbed his daughter's head, grabbed her head, and then gave her a big wet one on the lips.
That's kind of wrong.
And I looked at this, I tell you, when you see the picture, you go, what is wrong with this picture?
Yeah, that's just,
I mean, it was
wrong,
like, you know, it was like a passionate kiss. Oh my God. And I don't know why I didn't blog it right away, but I think it's one of those busy, you know, some of the stuff falls by the way. So, but I'm going to try to dig that up because I'm still shaking my head about it. So I don't see anything here on Army Times about the,
okay, I'm looking up DUI Army Post.
So I like to call him the Sergeant Shopper. That's great.
Okay, here we go. What is this from? This is from. What I'm looking for is I'm looking for like a serious, like a mainstream publication, so I don't get one of those. Oh, it's just a conspiracy theory nutters. And of course, military police assisting civilian police DUI checkpoints. I'm just trying to find a good one. I'll find it. It's out there. I mean, with a little bit of research.
Send it to me and link when you find one.
Yeah. So anyway, so it'll be nice to have you over on our side, John. I cannot wait. Very exciting.
And what if one of my bloggers may have blogged that?
Oh, I'm sure they have. This has been going. This the conversation about this has been going on for weeks now. Ever since it was first announced in the Army Times that they were now positioning these, you know, like 5,000 to 20,000. Troop strong battalions in the States, and these are guys and gals who just came out of Iraq. You know, they're like they've done some serious time. But I'm happy.
Yeah, we don't need those guys floating around trigger happy.
Right. So I just want to repeat. You said that if the Army is involved in DUI checkpoints,
I said if I see.
Oh, if you see, yeah, keep going.
A military guy at a roads block somewhere checking for DUI, then I'm on your side. I'm not going to argue with you anymore.
Yeah, no, but I think
which will make the show really interesting, by the way. But I'm not worried about it.
Hearts are breaking nationwide. I can hear it. Anyway, no, so yeah, that's
nobody picked it up.
Of course not.
It might be Bubba may have had it have it over on the cage match.
Yeah,
they have a lot of other stuff over there.
The thing is, if I start surfing websites, then
I
don't want to do that. But something else that you may or may not have heard about, there's this thing going on with Earth's magnetic field and the distance of space to the Earth. Have you been following any of that?
Yeah, well, I think there was even a NOVA. That was talking about the Earth's magnetic field. It's expected it's apparently in the mode of about to change poles.
Yeah.
I mean, it may take 1,000 years to do it, but in the process of changing and recharging itself,
mm-hmm.
Because we need that magnetic field. That's what keeps us from becoming Mars.
Yeah, right.
Because the cosmic rays are buffered, you know, it's like a buffer, and it's like a machine that keeps us from getting killed. And but it seems to be having all kinds of weirdness going on right now with little hot spots of magnetism and in areas where there's no magnetism, and it's, you know, I guess something's going on.
NASA's five Themis spacecraft have discovered a breach in Earth's magnetic field 10 times larger than anything previously thought to exist. Solar wind can flow in through the opening to load up the magnetosphere.
Yeah.
Love that. For powerful geomagnetic storms, Which, by the way, we had one in, I want to say, 97, 98. Do you remember that when it knocked out all the satellites and pagers stopped working and cell phones crapped out and there was no more satellite television? Don't you remember that?
No. I remember the discussion about it, but it, my understanding or my remembrance of it was not that much happened, at least around here.
Well, in New York, it was a big deal because pagers were pretty important at the time. And cell phones were, you know, were not really prolific for some reason.
They were too expensive.
That would, yeah, that would probably have been a part of it. So I don't know what that means, but a lot of 2012 people are jumping on the story.
Oh,
saying,
those 2012
see, people.
Those are the worst.
Be careful now.
What happens in 2013? This is the thing that's going to, you know, it's just around the corner, so I'm actually looking forward to it. What happens in 2013? I'll tell you exactly what happens. All these 2012 people are going to go on with this. I think the calculation was there's something, you know, the math
wasn't quite right.
They're going to come up with another date.
It wasn't quite right.
I mean, this is all these doomsday people. Always, they always have their fixed date. They always make it too close to when they're still alive so the people, they can rib them about it. And so they always, you know, it's always just around the corner. So then it comes and goes. I mean, we're supposed to have the end of the world in 2000, if anybody remembers that. And then, you know, then comes and goes, and then they're contrite about it, or they come up with some other bogus reason, but they usually lose about 70% of their followers because it's like bogus, and then the 30% that stick around build a new group with some other phony baloney doomsday date. I don't know.
Well, a lot of that 2000, I mean,
it's a club for getting laid, let's face it.
Let me just see if I can find some of those members. I don't know. well, but you know, the basis of the 2012 conversation, of course, is that the Mayan calendar actually ends then, and we usher in the age of Aquarius. And, you know, so there's a little more to it than just people picking a date. And
yeah, right. Now, I just picked up the calendar today from the Mechanics Bank. Hey, guess what? It ends at the end of 2009.
Yeah.
Well, does that mean it's the end of the world? No, it means a calendar. I got to get a new calendar.
Yeah, but the Mayans had all kinds of magic powers, dude.
Yeah.
They had mathematical.
That's why they got killed off by a bunch of dumb Spaniards.
We're making friends left and right. I do like the office of the president-elect announcing Tom Vilsack as Secretary of Agriculture. This guy he campaigned using the Monsanto private jet.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, he's a major GMO guy. He's all
You're
about
kidding.
No. Tom Vilsack, look it up. And there was something else I found about Vilsack, which is related to Hillary Clinton, which was interesting. An article from March 2007. Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton has agreed to help the one-time candidate who endorsed her on Monday as he seeks to retire a campaign debt of more than $400,000. And all of a sudden you're thinking, could that be related to his appointment? But, yeah, exactly.
So Monsanto's in the White House already. Is that what you're telling me?
Monsanto's, of course they are. Yeah, I've been doing a lot of reading about GMO, and it's kind of freaking me out. It's
genetically modified
organism, I guess, is what it's for. But so
Frankenfood.
So what they do, Frankenfood. So what they do is particularly with corn, which corn isn't just about everything we eat directly or indirectly.
No, we're a corn culture.
We are a corn culture. They take a 22 caliber either shotgun, but a 22 caliber bullet. And they jam in there the actual gene or the protein, the part of the DNA of a pesticide, and they shoot it into the grain, or into the seed, and then through some magical explosive process, a protein develops so that this corn can be sprayed with pesticide. They call it herbicide to make it sound more friendly. And so that the corn will then grow, without.
No, I think it is an herbicide.
It is an herbicide because it kills weeds. You're right. It is an herbicide. Yeah. So it's killing other plants, but it's genetically modified so that it die.
Corn,
right.
It doesn't.
The corn is right, yeah. But they feed this corn to laboratory rats, and 50% of them die.
Probably not healthy corn.
No, but it's in pretty much everything these days. And of course, as we've identified, you turned me onto this story months ago with the seed the seed actually spreads to the farmers next door.
Contaminates everything.
Contaminates, and it's not just the problem that it's then contaminated and it's genetically modified, but then Monsanto comes up and says, hey, excuse me, we own the patent on that. That's our seed. Either you pay us for it or we're going to destroy your crop. Because they own it. They've patented it. They own food. And that is now indeed in the White House.
Yeah. Well, that's good news. Thanks for that.
Sure. I got many more.
No, that's okay.
Now, and that whole Clinton thing.
Let me go back to the Nicole Kidman story.
That Australia movie is just wonderful. And by the way, isn't she barren? I thought that was the whole reason that Tom Cruise got rid of her. Because she was blowing that didgeridoo and she couldn't have kids.
It's possible.
I think so. It's a horrible way to. Is that the correct term?
That's the right term. I mean, nobody uses that word anymore. I'm surprised you did it, but it's got to be the worst thing for a woman to. You know, it's like a chicken that can't lay an egg kind of thing. But it's like, can't be a pleasant situation to be barren. It's just like being sterile, or you know, or guys who don't have enough. Their sperm count's not what it should be. It's they have just shooting with blanks. They used to always call it.
Yeah. Now barren is. I think that's probably old English. Even I remember it from the Oneidan Line, which was a fantastic series. I'm sure you've never seen. But it was 1700s, 1800s England, and they would talk about she is barren, and that was shameful. If you were barren, you were no good.
So, anyways, yeah, maybe she's been blowing that thing too long. I mean, maybe she blew, something. I mean, maybe there's something to it. Who knows? Yeah. I mean, because the funny thing about the didgeridoo is that which I think is you see these things. I don't know if anybody knows, but this is a long pipe that's got I don't know what's even inside the thing. It's like a string or something. And it, you make a sound into it and it makes a crappy noise. And,
it's more like,
yeah, it's pretty close. And, you run into these guys with these things because if somebody goes to Australia, they're in the subways of New York. And I think I've seen one in London, playing the thing with the hat out for donations. Like you should give them money for this. And, I just find it to be an obnoxious instrument, but it gives off such a weird sound that I could see where it could have there you go.
That's actually the kangaroo hop is what that one's called.
Yeah. So, anyway, that is the didgeridoo. I don't know where you got that clip, but good one.
From the didgeridoo sound clips archive, of course.
It's annoying. It's an obnoxious instrument.
You should be cursed by barrenness if you say that.
So the only thing that sounds worse than that is a bagpipe.
Oh, boy. Don't make me do that. I am not, I repeat, not going to play bagpipes on the show. Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Did you get a flu shot this year?
Yeah, I always get a flu shot.
Oh, good. Then besides all the mercury that now is in your body, it is interesting to note that, and this is from Reuters, of the 50 samples they tested the current flu on, 49 failed the virus.
Yeah, that's why I always carry. And I tell people this, and I might as well discuss it right now, because one of my friends had the flu the other day, and she, didn't do this because she didn't know. I've actually sent a memo around last year to the Mevio staff discussing it. And I always travel.
Wait, you're actually promoting flu shots?
No, I always travel with Tamiflu.
Right, so Tamiflu is the stuff that's not working. That's exactly what the article says. Tamiflu is not working against this.
Tamiflu? Tamiflu
is
not working?
Yes, it does. It says Tamiflu is not working.
All right, then I can take it one step further. First, let me describe what Tamiflu does. But it was expected, by the way, because there used to be a thing called Flumidine or something like that, that was a precursor to Tamiflu, and it stopped working about 5 years ago, just out of the blue. If you've got a prescription, it doesn't do anything, just for no known reason. And so everyone's expecting that that's what happened to Tamiflu. There's a fallback called Relenza.
No, it's listed here as well as not working. Here.
No, yes. Relenza doesn't work either.
Yes, here it's.
You got to send me this link.
Okay, here it comes.
That's not good,
dude. They're gearing up. So in China now, of course, there's another outbreak of the bird flu, and they've got billions of dollars already spent on some BS. The thing they're going to want to inject you with. There's the link. Tamiflu, blah 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 blah. A similar drug is Relenza. Or Zanamivir, made by GlaxoSmithKline.
They never tried it against Relenza. They just say a similar drug, and they're trying to pass it off.
No. Read the article.
I'm reading.
Read the article.
Where's it?
Tamiflu alternatives.
Rimonidine is the one that doesn't work at all.
You shouldn't be taking these shots at all, John.
These are not shots. These are pills you take.
Oh, the Tamiflu or pills. Yeah, don't take that either. Don't take any of that.
Oh, you just get sick and die. Give me a break. I used Tamiflu when I had the flu one time a couple years ago. In fact, I've used both of these, and they work great. And let me explain what they do. It's kind of interesting.
I've used Tamiflu for a urinary tract infection.
You did?
That was I was prescribed with it.
That's weird.
Just
so.
Saying.
Anyway, I have a blog post on Relenza. Go to the Dvorak.org/blog and type in Relenza, R-E-L-E-N-Z-A, instead of boring you stiff with it because you're just going to moan and groan about it. Don't take anything.
Do not let the government.
Anyway, Tamiflu works like a champ.
Well, but not according to this article on the current strain of flu.
I think this is a bogus article.
From Reuters. Okay, good.
No, I think it's like they're trying to get you to get. It says CDC says there's still time for Americans to get a flu shot as the season usually peaks in February. This is what that was the punchline to the story, the last paragraph. So what they're trying to do is get everyone. They got the huge stockpile of flu vaccine. They're giving shots at Costco, and you know after that fiasco from a few years ago, now they make too much of the stuff, and so they're trying to get rid of it. So that's what this is about.
Okay, so my advice still holds, and you'll back me up. Don't get injected by anything because it's not going to work anyway. Just get some Tamiflu. Is that what you're saying?
No, I always get a flu shot.
You're the first one to go, man.
No, nope, you'll see.
Okay.
I haven't had the flu ever since I started getting flu shots. I mean, except that one time where I had to use Tamiflu. What happened was the flu that was predicting, because these are predictive vaccines. There was something called the California flu that showed up in around the Bay Area, and I ended up getting it. And I used Tamiflu, and Tamiflu works great. It just basically, essentially, the way Tamiflu and Relenza work is that it stops the reproductive process of the flu that's in you, and keep whatever amount of symptoms you have when you start taking these drugs. They stops, but you maintain those symptoms. So for 5 days, but you don't get really sick, and you can still go to work, and you're not contagious and all the rest of it. But anyway. Anyway, after 5 days, it gives your body enough time to actually produce its own flu shot because it builds up the antibodies against this little batch of flu that's still in you. And then when you get off the drug, you actually have a spike. It's really actually kind of an interesting experience. You have a spike of flu. It's just like, oh, the drug didn't work. It's the first thing you think of because you start getting really sick. And then it's almost like within hours, it just disappears. It's like your body says, oh, well, this is no good, and it just goes after this, and it just knocks it out instantly. It's actually the weirdest experience you'll ever have in terms of, like, you know, disease. And so I always travel with Tamiflu, and my family has it all the time. We always have a batch with us, just in case.
For a while there, it was said that was going to be important for other. Couldn't it also shield you against radiation or something? It could help with that?
I never heard any of this other stuff.
I don't know about that then. Okay.
I thought it was pretty well, you know, targeted. I don't know. Maybe it does other things against other viruses. I mean, it's antiviral, but I know it doesn't do anything against a cold. And, this article is kind of sketchy.
International Monetary Fund Managing Director Dominique Strauss-Kahn has warned that advanced nations could face civil unrest during distressful economic times. Social unrest may happen in many countries, including advanced economies, if the economic crises are not properly dealt with. Basically, what we're seeing happening now.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
How come that doesn't happen in America? How come people aren't just so pissed off and angry?
Well, there's one main reason. We don't know anything. We've been dumbed down, like my article. We don't have any news. I mean, all I like, what is the top of news? If I went and look at the top news stories here, let's see, News U.S.
Well, often it's listed, but it only
here,
is
this
only
is
one
like,
story.
No, here I'm looking at the Reuters site that had the phony Tamiflu story. Retailers hope for crowds and final holiday push. Top story. Pike Pacauer Foundation closes due to Madoff investment. A lot of charities are going broke.
Yeah. We're going to see a lot of that.
Some blogs and the Greek police clashed with protesters. And then a puff piece on Obama. What a good guy he is. And I'm looking, nothing.
Phenomenal, isn't it?
Oh, there's one. Wait, here's one. There's a, no, that's a Google ad. Actually, the more interesting news is in the Google ad. Poll. China and India have had made a big strides in space in recent months, fueling talk of another race to land a man on the moon. Should the United States return to the moon? Yes, no. So let's put no and see what happens. Look at this. There's 42% yes and 58% no. See, this is where now we don't even want to go to the moon.
Oh, there's
fantastic. Nothing here. There's no here. Wait. Let me go to the better news. Lifestyle.
What are you looking at? This is Google? What are you looking at, man?
This is the Reuters news site with all the, top stories.
Do they have anything about the internet tax that New York is going to charge now? Nothing about that,
No, there's
right?
nothing like that. Well, maybe under politics. Let's see what politics reveals.
Yeah, politics.
By the way, that one of their pages fell apart from bad CSS. Bush, auto plan, only way to stave off collapse.
Of the world.
Obama picks climate specialist as science advisor.
Oh, don't even get me started on that one. Yeah. I think so. I haven't been able to find the link, but somewhere I heard some or I read someone that said, Al Gore said, these colder periods are entirely indicative of global warming. No way.
Yeah. I know. Fantastic. I get it. Every time we bring this up on the show quite a bit.
I love doing it.
I always get an email from somebody saying, it's natural to be colder during global warming. You know, it's
yeah, of course typical. It is.
Makes nothing but sense.
It's natural for it to be colder during global warming. Yes, I understand. I totally get it.
So
that is quite interesting.
And, the guy who sent me the note says global warming, climate change, they're trying to change the term themselves, is going to result in really weird, erratic weather. And I'm thinking, because I don't know, I mean, if you start reading because I did this as a project once, I read all the New York Times newspapers from about 1858 to about 1868.
How long did that take you?
It took a long time. It took a number of months. And I was collecting stories. That may not have been the period. It might have been from 1868 to 1878, but it was during around the Civil War. And I'm not sure. I think the Times was in business then. I think it was the time I was reading. Anyways, I was looking at all these little articles.
Well, you read the originals, of course, when they came out in 1886. So.
Of course. But my mom threw them away. So anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm reading this, and there's talk about erratic weather. I mean, if you start reading the history of weather in the United States, it's been erratic since day one. Storms of frogs. There'd be something happening in North Dakota, and it's just like rained frogs. All over the place. And I guess there were frogs. People had this. You couldn't get outside without stepping on a bunch of frogs that were raining down for some unknown reason. Nobody even knew where the frogs came from. And I mean, I remember that one distinctly. Going, it was a real head shaker. And there's all kinds of weird. Well, look at what happened. The Mormon legend about those locusts. And if you've ever seen one of those bugs, the big ones, the monster,
they're scary.
The size of a rat.
Yeah, they're scary.
And apparently they came in, you know, in some weather situation, and they just gobbled up the state of Utah, which is still a desert. And, I mean, this is nothing new, this erratic weather we've had. And the biggest hurricanes we've had in the past. And there's that hurricane that hit Connecticut some, you know, around the turn of the century or sometime in the, you know, I think it was like, I can't remember the date, but it was 100 years ago. And, so this is bull. I mean, you know, this right now it's snowing
in Vegas. In Vegas, it's snowing. It's snowing in Vegas.
Yeah, it's snowing in Vegas. This is just rat weather. This is what we have. See, in Vegas once when it was snowing. It snows in Texas a lot, which really is weird, since it never snows in the San Francisco Bay Area. Or it last time I think was 1972, 1973, and it snowed a little bit, and that was it. Last we've seen of it.
I remember being in Vegas when it snowed in the 90s, in December. CES, not CES, what was the Comdex?
Yeah, it may have snowed on a Comdex. Yeah. It was a couple of years ago it snowed. I was at the airport as the snow started falling, and it was, I think, in January, it was the first, you know, during CES. It's cold. It never stuck, though. It's thick.
Let's just move off this topic for a second. Heard from the EasyJet flight attendant today. You'll love this. So you know that the big talk now in Europe and the UK is the parity, because the pound is now it's like 2 cents difference equal to a euro.
Wow.
Yes, wow indeed. And so on EasyJet, you can pay in sterling, as we say, or euros. And I had lots of euros, so I want to get rid of some euros, and she has to do the calculation, and I can see her, like, smoke come out of her ears. I'm like, it's not that hard. It's like, it's almost the same. You know, a euro is a pound. She says, isn't that amazing? I mean, why even bother going anywhere? Why travel anymore? These people are so used to everything being cheap when they leave their country because the pound being so much more expensive or more valuable than any other monetary unit, that literally that's coming out of a typical British person. Why bother traveling when the pound is equal to a euro? We can't get a bargain.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Can't get a bargain. It never used to. It always used to be traditionally a buck and a half to a dollar for a pound, and it has fluctuated. It goes up. I've never seen it as high as it did this last time. But that, combined with inflation over there, made it impossible to go to England. I mean, I won't go there.
There's really nothing to do or to see anyway. Once you've done the tower thing, that's kind of it.
Have you been to the? I haven't been on the big
on the London Eye. Yeah, the Eye, the London Eye,
the big spinning thing.
Yeah,
it's called the Eye.
The London
Eye. An hour to go around it, and something takes like an hour, right?
No, it's not an hour. It's it's a good 20-25 minutes. It's very slow. It's a big Ferris wheel.
Yeah, Ferris wheel.
Yeah. No, yeah, I've been on that. That would be a sea ticket ride at Disney.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's whatever the ticket is, equal to the Mad Hatter's teacup. In fact, I think the Mad Hatter teacup is more exciting than the London Eye. Yeah. No, it's...
So I probably don't want to bother with it.
Yeah, I think for taking pictures, it would be great. We can see the London Eye from our new place, which is kind of cool. At night, they light it up really nice.
Is it? It's a big plastic ball. It must be all scratched up. I'm sure you can't get a decent shot through that miserable plastic.
It's interesting. I don't know. I thought it was. I wasn't taking serious pictures when I was on it, so I don't really remember. But no, I think it's doable.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's like that'd be okay. Capsules.
So there was a Charlie Rose show last night that had Malcolm Gladwell.
Who's that?
He's the guy who wrote the Tipping Point and some other book, and now he's got a new book out. And it's, these are these little bitty books that are, where he does a little research and comes to some crazy conclusions about one thing or another. Anyway, this last one he's done, and he's a real weird-looking character. He's got some, I guess he's got some Jamaican in him, so he decides... He looks like just a regular, kind of a big, a male model-ish jaw, heavy on the jawbone facial features with a afro that is from the 1970s. Mm-hmm. It's just ridiculous. I mean, it looks like, you know, that picture that I use on my Skype, you know.
The, right, with the big ad, the colored afro, yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, he did. So he came out with a book on some research that actually my son had told me about a year ago. And then Rose had another guy out with a similar book discussing the same research, which indicates that there's no such thing as talent. And so I'm, you know, first my son tells me about it. Then I see back-to-back stories about these two books saying that there's no such thing as talent. Hmm. And I'm starting to immediately, it wouldn't have been bad if it had won. I would have kind of listened and then gone on to some other topic. But no, have two in a row. And so I'm now thinking this is bull. There has to be some alternative reason for these two storylines to be, you know, why are we telling the public that there's no such thing as talent? What you have to do is work 10,000 hours to become an expert at anything, or approximately 10 years. That's what the research says.
Ah, okay. There, yeah.
It's, you get, you're following where this is, it might be.
Yeah, I'm listening. Keep it coming.
So I'm thinking, why, you know, when I first heard about this, I said, yeah, fine. My son boiled it down by saying, if you wanted to be a pianist, or if you wanted to be a trumpet player, or you wanted to be anything, if you want to spend 10 years practicing a lot, you will be as good as you can be. You can't be any better because you got your time in and this is as far as it's going to go. And so I just immediately, because of this back-to-back propaganda show, I'm thinking, all right, so this obviously bull. There's obviously something else going on. And I thought about a couple different things. Now, if it takes 10 years to get any level of expertise on anything where you're actually, you know, super good, how does that explain Gore Vidal's best-selling novel that he wrote when he was 19? Was he practicing novel writing since the age of 9? I don't think so. And what, you remember this group, these two guitar players that came out of South America called Los Indios Tabajaras? These were two guys who found a guitar in the Amazon jungle.
Yeah, I love it.
And within a year, we're like on the tour around the world playing this amazing guitar. Where's the 10 years? Where's the 10,000 hours? It's not there. So I'm thinking this, there's something, and I'm tracing this back to this, back to the argument about we don't want an educated public. We're going to, let's set these goals, these 10,000 hour goals if you want to do a lot of work. Gladwell had an anecdote saying that people with really high IQs never normally made much of themselves, which is bull, by the way, also. But he, you there?
Yeah, I'm listening. I'm just listening to you.
I'm sorry,
man.
Because
yeah.
I just got a beep from you.
No, no. I just sent you a link to the Army checkpoint.
Okay,
got it. I'm sorry.
Anyway, So Gladwell mentions that the geniuses probably, he said, all these geniuses, people with really high IQs, he made the claim that once you have an IQ, this is unbelievable, once you had an IQ of 120, you're good to go. In other words, anything else is meaningless.
No good, is lame. You're just a loser.
Just a loser. And he says he looked at people who had these really high IQs, like 160, 180, whatever. You know, these people. And
why, yes.
And you may be one of them. Anyway, he said, and they never made much of their lives. And he said, and he could only conclude that this was because they were smart enough to realize that the 10,000 hours was just too damn much work. This is the logic. So I'm
fantastic.
I'm thinking now that we're looking at a new twist, an absolutely new twist to the self-esteem movement.
Hmm. All right.
You know, you can be whatever you can want to be. If you want to try out, you can be at anything you want to be.
As long as you
discourage and as long as you put the work in, you'll get there, blah blah blah. And this is bull.
Well, that's very interesting. So there's two stories that'll relate to that. One is and this is a YouTube video which I'll have to dig up for you, which some kids did it, but I'm not too sure of the authenticity, but apparently they're showing a history book, a grade school history book in used in United States schools.
Oh, yeah, no, this went around. This is, I'm not sure about this either.
The New World Order chapter?
Oh, no, I didn't know. No, this is different than what I'm thinking.
Oh, no.
I was thinking, okay.
Well, I'll tell mine first. So,
yeah.
So the kid shows his history book, and then there's a chapter about the New World Order and how we have to get ready for it as we're going to have world government. And it's in the history book. He shows the page. And it says, get ready for the New World Order. I'll have to dig that one up. What was yours in the history book?
Hold on a second. I'm just trying to think of somebody's name. By the, there was a lot of utopianism that took place during the 30s. And there was a writer in particular who I read every time I can find one of his books. He's actually very interesting, named Stuart Chase. And people out there want to track down somebody who's who's kind of a utopianist. And Stuart Chase. And also there's a book, by the way, one of the classic books. If you can find this, you can find it at used bookstores. It was the number one bestseller almost worldwide, sold millions and millions of copies, and it was called Looking Backward by Bellamy. It was a bestseller, and I'm talking about millions and millions of copies in 1890. And Looking Backward is a book written from the perspective of someone in the year 2000, mm-hmm. looking backward on what changed since 1890. And this is an eye-opener. And again, I think you probably will get to this New World Order stuff from any of these types of books that were produced probably anywhere from 1880 to about till World War II. And now, of course, it's been reintroduced. I don't know. My story was that it was – I always thought you were going to refer to the what kids had to read as a history book and what they had to know back in, there's this thing, you know, 1920 or something, and there's this thing that went around a couple years ago on the internet about all these things you had to read and know about, and it was like completely, it was so far removed from what you get today, you know, with the self-esteem and the, you know, everybody's a winner and, you know, there's no such thing as a loser and, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Back to the loser's locker room.
Yeah. So. That's right. Oh, here's this kid. Hold
they
on.
They laugh. They literally call.
I'm trying to see if I can find it, and I'll just here. American Nation is the title of the book.
History. And as I was looking through it today in class,
it's highly produced though. I don't trust it.
Yeah, it could be a hoax. We can find out one way or the other.
Here it is.
Now, is this an old book? He says this is an old book or a new book?
A current book. Here it says, America in the New World Order, 1970 to present. I'm just reading off the YouTube video.
So what would you say? Okay, well, we'll just track it down.
Yeah. I'll send you the link right now. We can take a look at it later. But
it's not unusual for this kind of thinking to have come in and out of vogue. It's very common in the U.S. history.
What?
This utopian New World Order, one world government.
Well, that was George Bush Sr. He said it. He said it's a big idea, the New World Order.
Yeah, well, these internationalists are all around you. I mean, these are the ones, you know, that we have to be leery of. I mean, it's not a new group, and they're all very powerful people. There's a whole slew of them, and they, you know, they're not communists. They're not, you know, they're vaguely identifiable here and there, but they're commonly referred to as internationalists. And the
Project for a New American Century.
Yeah, that's typical. But the reason for this, of course, stems from World War I, when it was decided by what you would call your Illuminati or whoever, this insiders, that we can't keep having these damn wars. World War II was the real clincher. We can't keep having these damn wars because they ruin economies and people get killed.
No, this is where we fundamentally disagree. No, I believe that they actually want the wars for two reasons. One, they make money by selling weapons to both sides, so they make out like bandits. Two, it reduces the population. I think they want the wars. I disagree with you there.
Okay. I mean, I understand that perspective, and you might be right. Now that you mention that, though, it reminded me of something else I saw in Charlie Rose. I don't know why I'm watching Charlie Rose so much, but I guess there's nothing else on. It's so pathetic. I'm not a big fan of Charlie Rose because he always ends up talking about himself. And but he had William Gates on. What's his name? Gates.
Richard Gates.
Is it Richard Gates?
The
Secretary of Defense?
Yeah, it's Richard Gates.
It's Richard?
I thought it was.
Well, I don't think it is.
Hold on. Yeah, it is. Hold on. Gates. Richard Gates.
Oh, great. Now you got Firefox is installing your updates, and we'll start in a few moments. Great.
Maybe it's... now, what the hell is his name? Come on.
Well, just type in Gates, Secretary of Defense, in Google. I can't do it because my browser won't open.
Hold on. Secretary.
It's ridiculous. We don't have these things. We know this, ladies and gentlemen, is why we have no agenda. We have no brains.
It's Gates. Robert Gates. I'm sorry.
Robert Gates. Yes. Of course.
See, okay. I can just hear people yelling at their iPods. You schmucks!
Robert, you
freaking idiots! You can't pronounce Blagojevich. You don't know who's the Secretary of Defense. Canada is not being overtaken by the Queen, and it's getting hot in here, people. Good night.
So so he had Robert Gates on. And
oh, you mean the Secretary of Defense? Sure.
Yeah, and he's chatting with him about how he's going to be the Obama guy, you know, which is. And then out of the blue, for some reason, because Charlie Rose does this. In fact, he did it with Gladwell. Gladwell mentioned Bill Joy, and immediately, I mean, this is like the armband thing, you know, between McCain and Obama. Immediately, Rose jumps in and says, oh, I know Bill Joy. He's a good friend of mine. He's been on the show 1,000 times, seems unlikely.
No, yeah, so, really. What are you trying to say?
So I got a kick out of that. So anyway, so he pulls another one of these self-referential moments with Robert Gates, and he says, well, you and I, we're both good friends with Brzezinski.
Uh-huh. Bada-bing. There's the man.
And as soon as he said that, I'm saying, oh, Gates is with Brzezinski.
Uh-huh.
Well, wait a minute. So
Gates was with Carter. Gates was with Brzezinski. Gates was with Carter.
Yeah.
He's been in the defense for since the 70s. The guy is no change, okay? No change. I don't care what you say.
It's not only no change, it's like back to Carter.
It's no change, people.
Welcome back, Carter. We should have the music.
Welcome back. I bet you I have it somewhere. That's probably something I have on my computer, you know what I mean?
The theme song. So anyway, so I thought that was a little. I don't know. I'm just I was still looking at the Nicole Kidman material, and so I wasn't. I only ran into the Charlie Rose show because I was looking for TMZ. To watch the extra. I'm looking for that or Inside Edition.
You're killing me.
I get
You're
the real good news there.
So I do this this daily thing on Mevio. It's called Mevio Today.
Right, you can find it by going to mevio.com.
Yeah, and I'm doing all these little things. I had a good one that someone posted on the drop, and I did it at the opening. I said, Mevio Sports News Update. White Sox fans, go to the White House. Cubs fans, go to the Big House. And, with the right pictures and everything. It's just perfect. I love it. So now we're getting away with a little bit of...
little political commentary. It won't last.
Yeah, they like it. Everyone likes it. The board likes it.
They like it. They like it to a point. Well, I'm surprised that by the way, we have to get more people listening to our little podcast here because if everyone would just tell a friend or give a copy, burn a CD.
Yeah, we double our numbers overnight.
And they can put it in their car and listen to us ramble on and not know who Robert Gates is.
Let's do something non-political it's from AP. The group representing the U.S. recording industry, that would be the RIAA, Friday said it has abandoned its policy of suing people for sharing songs protected by copyright and will now work with internet service providers to cut abusers' access if they ignore repeated warnings. Apparently, it was costing too much money.
Oh, they were losing money on these lawsuits.
Yeah, of course. Of course they were. The lawyers were loving it.
Oh, I'm sure they were. The lawyers are going to be loving this Bernie thing, too. Can you imagine?
Oh no! Oh yeah, absolutely. And he's under house arrest, and I'm sure
he's still in his limo. He's in his limo, and he's in a mansion. And why is it? Hey, well, let's back up a second. Martha Stewart
went to the big house. Went to jail
for
$7,000, maybe she made or 70. Who gives a shit what it was? Maybe she did something that was a little out of the ordinary. And these guys,
she's a homemaker. A rich one, but still.
Yeah, no, exactly. You're so right. And OJ's still walking around. Or is he now finally incarcerated?
I think he's done. He's in jail. He's done. He's through. Finally.
But yeah, that's pretty crazy, isn't it?
Where was the SEC?
Don't they, there was something about the SEC as well. I mean, there's so much information. They seem to do this when we're really interested in Nicole Kidman, they seem to do all kinds of crazy shit. You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, well, they seem to be doing it on a daily basis. That's what's weird.
Yeah, it really is true.
So the price of oil is at 38 anyway. So headed to 30. I think that's where it's going to bottom out, which will bring our gas prices down to $1.50, which is pretty much for a premium, which is about what it should be.
Well, yeah, but now, of course, OPEC is doing the largest production cut in history, trying to jack the prices up. I mean, it just makes me laugh. I mean, we just sit there and go, OPEC, whatever. You know, we're all hypnotized, you know, getting a hard on over Nicole Kidman. And meanwhile, OPEC is just out there saying, hey, we're going to try and jack your prices up. No one's saying anything. That's exactly what they're saying. In fact, it's even worse. We're going to jack it up, and here's how we're going to do it.
Yeah, this is like a football team that tells you the plays in advance.
And no one cares.
Yeah. I know, it's unbelievable. But again, it comes back to the dumbing down of the public. Nobody wants, you know, nobody's educated anymore.
Obama has made it very clear he wants to change that. Not by improving education, but by putting internet into schools.
Right. No, making me even dumber. I mean, if you listen to Obama, he never once talks about anything that has to do with learning stuff. No. It's always infrastructure.
And
Infrastructure. So basically, we're going to have a bunch of, you know, mostly Mexicans, you know, building out infrastructure.
Yep.
And people still be as dumb as ever. And they're going to be looking at, you know, the internet, the inner tubes. And they're going to look and do what I do. They're going to look at the Nicole Kidman story.
Wake up, sheeple.
Yeah, it's too late.
No, it's never too late. It's never too late.
It's over.
What is this? IT guru for Karl Rove died in plane crash.
This is the
guy who had the emails for the Ohio election fraud. He ran out of gas in his plane. Oh, really?
Where'd you get this story? Send me a link.
It's breaking.
Breaking story.
Breaking news. Yeah. Updated. Hold on. I'll send you the link. Oh my gosh. There's so much happening. It is their favorite way, isn't it? You ran out of gas. You know, if you run out of gas in a plane, no reason for you to crash and die. Okay. There's no reason. You can land the plane.
In a helicopter.
You can auto rotate. I mean, of course, I don't have any information on what the crash actually was, but it was probably suicide by petrol.
Yeah, I'm always dubious about it. And once in a while, they actually around the Bay Area, I think once every couple of years, it's always weird to me when somebody is famous gets killed in a plane, unless there's something like a storm. You know, they shouldn't be flying. That's what happened to Bill Graham. But once in a while, some bonehead doesn't top. I don't know what happens, but he runs out of fuel, and they always lands, you know, in a neighborhood, on a highway, on the freeway. Sure, sure. They always land. Yeah. Very rarely did this guy get killed because he ran out of gas, unless he's, you know, over the ocean.
There was a guy who had a slight aneurysm in the UK a couple weeks ago, and I think it was the UK, and so he temporarily went blind. He could not see. And they talked him down. They had an army pilot got into like some, you know, biplane trainer or some crap like that. It flew alongside him, talked him down to the runway, and he landed perfectly.
Wow.
Yeah. It's we hear. The Akron Beacon Journal reporting the private plane of GOP's highly placed IT guru Mike Connell went down in Lake Township, Ohio on Friday evening. He was killed in the crash, reported to have been the only person on board, of course. No reports of anyone on the ground being hurt. Key witness in the King Lincoln v. Blackwell lawsuit regarding fraud in the 2004 presidential election in Ohio that recently revived longstanding lawsuit led to Connell's recent deposition November 3rd. All right, so that stinks. That really stinks. Oh, they gotta clean some shit up before they get out of there, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, whose side is he on in this? Who's cleaning him up? I mean,
There's no side. Okay.
Oh, okay. Never mind. What am I even bringing?
Why
that
are you even asking
for?
That? There's no side. You know. So someone tried to register. They work for us. .org.
Yeah.
You should go to theyworkforus.org.
What is it?
It's registered by the government, of course.
It is?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
No, it's funny. It's actually the federal employees. They work for us. They got little radio commercials. Here, I'll play you the radio commercial. It's hilarious. This is really funny. Here, listen to this. Hold on.
We protect the integrity of the national banking system.
We protect American democracy and let the public know who contributes to federal candidates.
We ensure the safety of America's food, drug, medical device, and cosmetic products.
We protect the air you breathe and the water you drink.
We work to improve the energy security of the United States and to safeguard our nuclear weapons.
We are on the front lines guarding against terrorism.
Federal employees keep our nation vital and strong. Federal employees, they work for us.
That's great.
Isn't that awesome?
I gotta get a job with the federal government, I'm guessing, pretty soon.
Yeah, they got really cool.
There won't be any other work available for anyone.
That's correct. You are correct.
Yeah. If you take a look at the, I mean, this is essentially, we're going to see what Roosevelt did, you know, just basically.
The New Deal.
Yeah. This is basically.
This is what they're angry about in Greece, because in Greece they've already started the New Deal, because of course it is a world government. And they're privatizing everything. So you'll see now there's a lot of movement in infrastructure companies. The huge conglomerates are now shifting all of their money into buying up companies that build roads, tunnels, etc. It's all being privatized, and all that money that was flowing to other crap is now flowing into that. And there's going to be $1 trillion that Obama is going to approve as a stimulus, and that $1 trillion is going to go right to the same people, and we're going to make some BS roads. And of course the question is, that's another trillion we'll tack on to the $8 trillion already extended in the bailout. The Chinese are now saying, hey, we're not going to lend forever, so that means we'll have to print it. It goes on the balance sheet, which means we're going to get inflation. There's just no, I just don't see it happening any other way.
Well, you have to have inflation.
Yeah, but it's going to be pretty significant.
Well, you have to have inflation for this economy to work the way they want it to work. And yeah, it probably will be significant. They can't control it very well. But right now, they put the interest rate down to zero. So that's our beginning point.
Yeah, it's zero, right? It's nil,
yeah,
nil.
Yeah, it's zero. Yeah. It's zero. That's like,
so explain what that means. John, what does that mean for people who just gloss over that and take no heed of the fact that there are people controlling the cost of our homes, the cost of our groceries, the cost of our cars? They're doing this by controlling the interest rates. John C. Dvorak, please, in under 1 minute and 30 seconds, explain what this is about.
Well, the idea is, of course, to curb inflation by changing the interest rates as the only, supposedly the only lever we have that.
But why is that necessary? Why is it necessary to curb inflation?
Because inflation, if you have really bad inflation, it causes, which could devolve into hyperinflation. It hurts the banks more than anyone.
Okay. So it's to protect the banks.
So here's the deal. So I borrow $100 from you, and the $100 is worth, like, say, $100 worth of gold. And now we have inflation, and the $100 is now worth, 10 cents worth of gold. And they're basically making millions of dollars a day, or I have a $10 billion note, like, you know, the Zimbabwe notes. And now I can pay your $100 back with this cheap money, and you're screwed.
So you did it in under 30 seconds. It is to protect the banks. It's to protect them, not for us.
Yeah.
It's to protect the banks. Okay, thank you.
Now, but if banks are all out of business and we're all the only banker we have is in China, let's go for it. Let's have inflation here.
Well, but you mean if you need to borrow from the bank? I got an idea. It's called a mattress. Stick your shit underneath that. Save it in the sock. Save your money. And then go buy it.
I'm waiting for the interest rates to go negative. Because what that means is that when I give the Treasury $100... they give me back 95.
It's fantastic.
So
is this a great country or what?
This is a great country or what? So anyway, so we get it down to a zero, because that's where you want. That's your beginning point. Now we got lots of room to operate, because you were at zero. So when things start to crank up, we got lots of headroom here. Now we can move the interest rates up to 5, and it's still going to be low, and it's going to create a really hot economy. And I think we're going to have a boom that is like just going to shock everybody. But the problem is it's going to be a false boom. It's going to fool everybody because here's what's going to here. This is my scenario, of course.
Okay. And by the way, I think I'm agreeing with you already. Go ahead.
So what we've got here, we have this horrible situation that we're experiencing right now. And so it looks like an absolute bottom. The depression is the worst thing you can have. We're going to build from this. We bring in our new president. He's going to do infrastructure stuff. He's got a little Rooseveltian thing going on. He's got Brzezinski. You know, we get a little Cold War action starting again, which keeps the military happy.
We got troops on the streets.
We got troops in the streets. It's perfect. So now we start to crank. We're throwing money into the system, and it's starting to crank up the economy. And we all know that the depression is over because it only lasts a little while. You know, this is it. We're experiencing today, and now it's time to get back to work. So we're going to start cranking this thing up. Obama's going to be behind the whole thing, and everyone is going to go into all the pent up demand is going to hit the market at the same time, which is going to give you that hockey stick look, and everybody's going to catch up. They're going to have panic buying on Wall Street because people are going to say, oh God, I'm going to miss it. Look at the stock. The price of U.S. steel is down to nothing. It's going up. It's doubled already. It's going to double again.
Then they pull the rug.
Then they pull the rug.
And they do that by doing what?
Oh, you don't have to do anything. We're bankrupt. Well, it's just going to do it by itself. It's an automatic system.
And that's when we enter, here's a new phrase for you, the greatest depression.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah, nice.
Let me write that down because it's something I might forget.
The greatest depression.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one. That's gonna catch on.
That should be a T-shirt.
The greatest depression. Yeah, we should do that for our next limited edition T-shirt. People should go to noagenda.angryshirts.com and buy a T-shirt for us. Greatest depression. Yeah, we have to plug the T-shirt at the beginning of the show, not the end.
What difference does it make? People listen all the way through. I mean, if you're satisfied, if you are still listening to the show, buy a damn T-shirt. Okay. If you're listening all through this, what is it now? An hour and a half? We're getting up there, aren't we?
About an hour and a half.
Yeah, it's about time to.
Greatest Depression. See if you can get greatestdepression.com before we post this.
Yeah, okay. Hold on a second. Should it be the greatest depression?
But I think you have to get both.
Hold on.
The greatest depression and greatest depression. I'm sure nobody's got it.
Depression. Hold on, I gotta go to GoDaddy. GoDaddy.
That'll be a great. That'll be the what we'll term the situation. I mean, it's gonna be a mess. I'm not looking forward to it. People are moaning now. This beyond moaning. You have to remember during the Roosevelt era. I mean, there was common thinking that we were gonna overthrow the government. That's how bad it was.
Yeah. Hold on. I of course, don't remember that. Okay, hold on. Here it is. Already taken. TheGreatestDepression.com is already taken. Let me try a greatest depression. Bet you that's gone, too.
Oh, well. That's okay.
GoDaddy has not confirmed that yet. It's coming through, and the answer is already taken. So, is there a website?
Yeah. Probably not. It's probably a Parker. Or some guy talking about his wife being depressed.
What? Oh, yeah, parking. It's at parking.
Yeah.
Bummer.
All right, well, I think...
Bummer.
Yeah, well, it was a good shot.
But we can still use it. Term is valid.
Yeah, we can use it.
Absolutely. Right, so that for you is 2011, right? That's kind of your...
No, 2013. I mean, there's two or three scenarios that we can look at that are based on historical scenarios. And there's the two that I like the best. One of them entails a crash at the end of next year, and then we begin, and that's the real classic 80-year cycle, which took place in 1929.
Well, that makes sense, John, because what we have coming, obviously the credit card... House of Cards is about to cave in, and then we have commercial real estate, because every single huge chain is out of business. Commercial real estate, I think, is overextended far and beyond the private.
Oh, I just look at San Francisco. There's buildings all over the place. Who's going to work in these things?
We're going to have empty malls, and people are not going to feel uncomfortable. And the strip malls are going to have big gaps in it with places that are just chopped out. It's just gone, and there's no one to replace it. There's no new businesses.
Right. Well, anyway, so here, let me give you the two scenarios for people, I've probably said these scenarios too many times for some people.
It's all right. It's
but the classic would be the following. You have Obama comes in, everybody's all jacked up, and we have a real hockey stick run-up, and the stock market goes to 25,000, by the way. That's the key number. And when the market hits, people say, ah, it's bull. It's never going to happen.
25,000.
Yeah, when this Dow Jones hits 25,000, sell everything you own. Okay, and it could hit 30, and you're, oh, I could have made more money. Get out.
Right.
Okay, so the market skyrockets. By the way, you have to remember that in 1929 alone, the Dow Jones tripled within the year. So it's not uncommon for something like this to happen. It's happened before. And before that, historically, there was never a Dow Jones, so we couldn't really trace things. But there are other evidences of this really fast climb. And if you look at the way that the pound collapsed, I mean, that's ridiculously fast. So things are moving. Anyway, so the market takes off, and then you have a crash traditionally in October of 2009. The market should crash on some Monday or Friday. And then it recovers, kind of, and never quite makes it back to the 25,000. But then it starts to go into a slow slide, which bottoms out in 2013. No matter what scenario I pick, 2013 is still the operative year for the bottom of the depression, technically. But it's so horrible at that point that you don't have a real even recovery. You have kind of a sketchy recovery that takes about 7 years. So you don't really have anything, you know, the happy days do not return, except the model always shows, and by the way, this will happen too, that in 2017, you have a kind of a mini boom, and then it crashes back down. It's just a short-term thing. It happened in 1857, and it happened in almost every 40 years. So anyway, that's the one possibility, which is the worst case scenario.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
You're going to have this one opportunity at the end of 2009, just before the crash, to maybe make some money and put it away. But other than that, you don't have enough time to get the millions of dollars you're going to need to get through the big one. Okay, the other possibility happened in 1890. You had a very interesting situation where there should have been a crash in 1889. There wasn't. We actually had a bull market and a boom that took place until about 1892, 1893, and then they had a massive crash and what was called a depression in 1893, which matches that cycle, which would match 2013 if you add, 40 years to it over again.
How does the French Revolution play into that? Is that also on one of those 40 to 80 years?
Actually, the French Revolution, I have a bunch of, there's a bunch of international stuff. 1789
to 1799.
Yeah, there was a, there's actually some things that happened during that period. I have a chronology. That I'm going to publish. Wait,
but the French Revolution happened for the same reasons. You had this guy who was printing up the money, and he was, basically he had shares in the bank that was printing the money. And
yeah,
that's what
it looks like superficially. But since I'm a cycle guy, it was part of a cycle more than it was that, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. Okay. Well, so I'm down with that because it doesn't really matter because people are doing stupid stuff all the time. It's just every 80 years, the stupid stuff the guy at the time is doing, he gets blamed for it.
Right.
I'll accept that.
Well, it was the same thing with Hoover. And that's why I was kind of hoping McCain was going to get in, because it would have reset the political system a little more logically. And I think Obama would have been a better president in 2012. But he got in. So what happened with Hoover, you had this, Calvin Coolidge was the George Bush of his era, just a do-nothing bonehead, and who spent all his time fishing, and which was exactly the same as Bush in that regard. I think he was out fishing during some natural disaster, and which is hilarious.
Yeah, Katrina.
And he and basically screwed up the economy in such a way that the guy who had to take over the place, which was Hoover, who was another clueless Republican that didn't really know what to do if things were bad. He was like one of those you know, if the, you know, some people can run a company when things are good, and some people can turn around a company as a specialist, and some people can run a company when things are bad. I mean, you don't have all three skills usually, and the same thing with being a chief executive. If things are going great, you know, this guy does the job, but if things turn around, he doesn't know what to do, and that's what happened. So he got stuck holding the bag and got kicked out, and Roosevelt came in. This could happen to Obama.
But this time look, Obama promised I was going to get laid, and it ain't going to happen. All right, that's just the long and the short of it.
Well, that's because of your neighbor.
The moral of the story, ladies and gentlemen, is it doesn't hurt to check out a little bit of history. And by the way, Wikipedia does not count. You should look at the pharmaceutical websites, pharmaceutical pages on Wikipedia. Hilarious.
Oh, they're all just commercials.
Yeah, it's great for you. And no one ever bitches and moans about that.
Yeah, ever. No, that's right. No, it's really pathetic. Some of the Wikipedia pages are nothing more than... There's the one for Noam Chomsky is a joke. You should check that one out. It's like, this thing is like a million... This is like a terabyte.
Do you know that schools now let kids use Wikipedia for their research, for their papers?
That's wrong.
Yes, it's completely wrong. Schools are allowing that. And Obama, of course, will be putting more internet in so that we can get more Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's about it. Well, that's depressing.
No, not at all. I see it as another battle that will be fought uphill and in the rain.
Yeah, well, you won't be liking it when I move into your house with my family.
John, you'll be more than welcome. Bring some sausage meats. All right. Well, hey, listen, that was long. It was a good time.
Yeah, don't forget, there's a hole in the middle you can pull out.
I stopped the recording when I went downstairs. You mean that?
Oh, okay.
I never cut anything out, ever. It's too good, your show. Too good. All right, tell a friend. Read Bubba Martin's show notes. Buy a T-shirt. Coming to you from Gitmo Nation East in the UK, my name's Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak in Gitmo Nation West, also known as Northern Silicon Valley, a place that doesn't exist, but we think it does.
And we'll talk to you again next week right here on No Agenda.